This is Suno India production. You can now listen to all our episodes on our Android and iPhone app. Download it now.
We are seeing what is being called one of the worst droughts in recent years in Karnataka, and Bangalore has become unlivable. We are getting reports that techies are leaving the city back to their hometowns to work from there because there's simply not enough water in the city. Right now, Bangalore has access to only half the amount of water that it needs on a daily basis. And there's no water in high-end mid-rise buildings, gated colonies. We know that from the reports that government is rationing out water tankers, construction using the adjacent Cauri River is banned, new borewells are being dug, and so on. Today, we have with us Shreya Nath, who heads the Urban Water Program at Well Labs, which is an environmental research organization based in Bengaluru. Shreya, I want to know from you, how bad is the situation there? And you think that, is it likely to get worse?
So we work very closely with the Bangalore Apartments Federation. So we are hearing firsthand reports of people really not having water yielding from their borewells, which have otherwise been quite reliable. And there are areas of the city where they're only getting tankers intermittently, and even those have been seized. So the water situation is quite severe this time round, and it is potentially going to get worse over the next couple of months because the rains are expected only in June of this year. I think what makes it extremely acute this year is that we've seen a lot of return to the workplaces and people moving back post-COVID, which has caused, the areas on the periphery of the city, which is mostly groundwater dependent, to have increased people also drawing out this water. In addition to the fact that we didn't have a great rainfall year last year, Bangalore is always known to have pleasant climate towards the end of March and beginning of April, once we have some April showers. But that's not predicted to be the case this year. So we can expect things to get slightly worse going forward.
We know that, one source of water for Bangalore is the Cauri River, but it is physically distant, and also pulling water from there includes a lot of cost, right? So now we know that the city is expanding, and particularly the new suburbs, they're increasingly dependent on groundwater, which is also, again, a very unreliable resource now. We need a better understanding of the water system, of course, and not just Bangalore, for any city which is growing at a pace and is urbanizing the way Bangalore did. This holds true. But I want to understand, from where is Bangalore's water and how much is there, and in what condition it is?
So Bangalore gets approximately, 50% of its water from the Cauri River. And the remaining 50% actually comes from borewells. And the water that's supplied from the BWSSB, we get approximately 1,460 MLD, but out of that, 331 MLD is actually, that's million liters a day, is actually lost in pipeline leakages. Mm. And out of that, most of it is private borewells within apartment complexes, individual homes, commercial and institutional buildings, and also industry. So because that the pipeline networks really haven't reached the periphery in many parts of the city, people have been reliant on borewells and tankers for, over the past decade, I would say. I think we are seeing people actually installing rainwater harvesting pits in their apartments, for instance. What we have found through our research is that rainwater, while it does show potential, wastewater is where we can really make a huge dent in the amount of in offsetting freshwater consumption. And wastewater, right now in large apartments, most apartments are mandated to have a decentralized sewage treatment plant located on site. And what that essentially means is that if that STP or sewage treatment plant is brought up to a standard where it's able to give residents, near potable quality, I wouldn't say use it for potable uses, but for everything else, you could really offset more than 70% of your water usage. And we're seeing this being done in different parts of the city as lighthouse examples. And it's not very, and in fact, they've been able to have savings in the long run. So even though there's a cost of retrofitting these systems initially, there is savings that they have in the long run if they actually install these systems and reuse the water, especially because over the past decade, there has been a huge increase in tanker prices. And more than just the prices itself, we're noticing that people are more worried about availability. At this point of time, people are ready to pay any amount for water, but they're just really worried that they're not going to get a tanker be available at all. So I think the city basically has two main sources of water, which it can reuse locally. One is rainwater, which is the water we're getting every time it rains within the city limits. And the second is wastewater. And this is apart from the Kaveri. So we really just need to look at how we can manage both these resources. We feel like wastewater is really important to harness because rains are going to get more and more unpredictable. And we have to harness rainwater during the monsoon where we receive most of our rainfall. So what's happened is we get rain now over a shorter duration. So it's condensed into 4 months. And even in those 4 months, it's condensed into a few hours a day in those days that it actually rains. So that's why our city is flooding. And it's so counterintuitive, right? Why is the city flooding on one hand and why do we have water scarcity on the other? And the answer is we have just built the city up so much that there's nowhere for that water to percolate. And Bangalore actually sits on a hard rock aquifer. So for you to just visualize this, if anyone's been to Lal Bagh, you know, there's that hill. That's essentially the same rock that sits below the surface of the earth. And where the water is actually stored is in cracks within that rock. So it's not very easy. Supposing it rains, it takes a long time for water to actually find gaps in the cracks between that rock to actually penetrate the aquifer. So what we really would need to do is have holding areas for this rain to capture it and let it slowly percolate into the aquifer. So, but that is a long-term plan. The more immediate thing that people can do is start reusing wastewater because we generate that every day. We just need to manage our systems better. Right now, this is the first time we've had a drought that's been so severe that even if you throw money at the problem, it's not going away because people are really not able to just get tankers into their buildings, etc. China had a very similar problem and they adopted this sponge city approach to 30 of their cities. For them, flooding was the big issue, but it really helped with groundwater recharge as well. And in our case, I think even though Bangalore has repeatedly faced flooding, somehow the water shortage seems to be affecting people much more acutely because the flood water does actually subside after a while. I think at this point of time, it's become very clear that it's actually just a water management issue and not a water availability issue because we do have 1,800 MLD of water coming into the city as rainfall every single day.
And I also read that, you know, there's a complicated problem of wastewater treatment, as you also did mention. But all the problem of mismanagement, of course, you mentioned. But there is also lack of acceptance for use. And I also read that there is a lot of waste-treated water flowing into the lakes nearby. And then the lakes are already halfway full. When it's raining, the water is all over. So can you elaborate into that problem as well?
Bangalore was known as the city of 1,000 lakes. And we have this really amazing cascading lake system, which was mostly man-made, mostly very intentional in the way it was designed. And it was meant to actually supply fresh water to residents in the city. And what essentially now happens is that the treated sewage water from centralized STPs, BWSSB STPs, usually are let into these stormwater drains, which then lead into lakes. And unfortunately, what is also happening in those same channels is that there's a lot of untreated sewage that's being let into those same channels from areas of the city which are which slip under the cracks of the official treatment. So this could be slum areas. This could be areas which don't have access to the sewer network and they have septic tanks. So you see these honeysuckers, those sewage tankers that actually go and draw out this semi-treated sewage. And then they have no place to take it because our city doesn't have what you call fecal sludge, FSTPs, fecal sludge treatment plants, which actually addresses only what's in the septic tank. And you can't combine it with the a sewage which is in the sewer network. So due to a lack of choice, sometimes the sewage that the septage, which is taken out of these septic tanks, is taken and dumped into stormwater drains. So what's happening is, and on top of that, apartments that have these sewage treatment plants, that 25% number that I was talking about of the decentralized STPs, they really don't know how to reuse this water within the fence. So what they tend to do is they use it for toilet flushing and they use it for landscaping. And this is a perception issue, but this is also an economics issue, in my opinion, because the average cost of treatment ranges anywhere between 600 rupees to 1,000 rupees per apartment, depending on the treatment system. And if people feel like they're really not getting a return on their investment, they're disincentivized to actually go and treat that sewage even better. But given the acute water shortage problem we're facing now, and the fact that tanker prices have gone up so much and reliability is lower, now there could be a little bit of a shift in, you know, the economic case for better treating that sewage and not letting it out. So you have this beautiful cascading lake system that was supposed to hold rainwater and supply fresh water, which now has a mix of treated sewage from BWSSB STPs, untreated sewage or semi-treated sewage from these honeysuckers that are dumping it in different areas. You know, in order for there to be sort of some kind of awareness that the water is safe, in addition to having digital tracking systems of parameters, which people can access, what they've done in IIT Chennai, which I think is quite a smart thing, is that they actually have a fish pond. So it's a very visual indicator, and that they put very sensitive fish species in there. And the number one way to tell whether a lake is healthy or not is to see whether fish are dying and whether there are fish kills. So people can actually go and visually see that fish pond. So I think some of this is awareness building. But in my opinion, the best way to actually encourage more reuse is to do it to start off with for non-potable uses. For example, in construction, in industry, for landscape irrigation, and eventually start getting systems which are so robust and so trustworthy. Almost everyone who's probably listening to this podcast has some kind of water filtration system in their house, whether it's an aquaguard or whatever it is. And everyone relies on it thinking that it's going to get good water because the brand has become a proxy for knowing that the water is actually going to be a good quality. Eventually, the market will be penetrated with systems like this for sewage treatment, where we start saying, okay, you know what? We just have to run this system. It's like a washing machine. We don't have to think about it twice and we're going to get good water. So that's on the private side. On the government side, really cleaning up those lakes and starting to look at indirect potable reuse, which is essentially recharging bore wells adjacent to the lake and supplying that water, could be a really good strategy because we circulated a survey a while ago with residents in the city, and we found that they were much more likely to drink water from a lake than they were to drink water from an STP. And I think this is the exact same model that Singapore follows, and I think that's a model that we could follow as well.
I also want to understand, how do we look at the challenges? I know you've described some, but it is still not clear what is happening with the current water management strategy in Bangalore. What is happening on the ground?
So we get 1460 million liters of water a day from the Kaveri, and it's remained the same since 2015. But the population of the city has grown tremendously in that period. In 2011, we were close to 8.5 million, and our projected population is now at 13 million. So we definitely feel like, you know, the amount of water consumption has drastically increased, and mostly for domestic usage. Domestic usage is about 75%. Industry is about 15 to 18%. And then we have, you know, a combination of construction and irrigation, et cetera, which is the balance. So the main issue is that the imported water, which is our main source of water, has remained pretty much the same since 2015. What's happening is we pull out groundwater about 13 and a half times faster than we're able to recharge. In fact, most of the recharge that's happening in the city is happening due to pipeline leakages from the central sewer network. So actually, if you go to the central parts of the city, for example, I live in Indranagar, our borewell hasn't dried up. And it's because we get BWSSB supply, not because it's particularly more green or it is green. It does have trees, but it still doesn't have that many permeable spaces which are there to absorb the water. The biggest issue is that we are mostly reliant on this imported water. We're not taking advantage of the local sources that we have to the full potential that we need to. And we're reliant on this water that has, you know, been stored in the aquifer through years, decades of recharge. Groundwater should always be used as primarily as a backstop.
And, you know, we, as you also mentioned, that it's not going to rain before mid-June. And which means that we have a lot of time until then. Government is taking several steps like seizing water tankers and, you know, banning car washing and all of that. So, but is this an adequate solution? Whatever you've mentioned can be done only in the long run. But what to do now?
I think we've been thinking a lot about this question of what we can do immediately. And some of the answers are going to be hard to hear. But I think really at this point of time, we have to look at water conservation in certain parts of the city. I mean, if you really, the government is taking steps, but whatever the government can do will be more of a long-term solution than an immediate solution, because there is no possible way to just immediately recharge the aquifer in like 10 or 20 days. There are some things you can do, which, for example, the lakes which are very clean in the city, which have already been desilted, which are dry, you can go and put wastewater into it and then have boreholes right next to it and supply it to homes and then have them run it through a water treatment system. You can have the government install tertiary treatment sewage treatment plants, which can be done very quickly, and then supply that water to homes. But still, you would still be looking at, you know, at least 2 to 3 months to see all of this happen. So in the immediate, what we can do at an individual level to make sure that we actually have enough water, even in the parts of the city which have borewells, they will also stop yielding, considering how much is being taken out. Because we have to think about where these tankers are also getting water, right? They're going to the periphery of the city further and further away. And eventually, even those will dry up if there's that much demand. So the average amount of water that's actually consumed is around 135 liters per day. And there are ways to actually reduce the amount of water we use. So we should never reduce the amount of water for things like cooking, drinking, or utensil washing. But for example, we could reduce the amount of water that's used for showering, which is the number one consumer of water. So generally per person, we say that there's around 55 liters per day. But we could start switching to, you know, from a shower to a bucket bath and then fill up the bucket only once and then just use that. We could also adopt things like half flushes for toilets. We could make sure that our laundry is done with a full load and, you know, just running it on low temperature rather than a high temperature, which takes a lot more water. So doing quick washes. So from that, we can go from around 135 liters per day to around 70 liters per day, which at least increases the amount of water we have available. So that's the answer no one wants to hear, right? No one wants to hear that you have to have like a lifestyle change. But the truth is, it isn't going to be something that we can just wave a wand and get more water immediately. There just isn't an easy answer to this. The right thing to do would be to advocate for the long-term measures now with the government. And that's exactly what we've been trying to do with a whole network of partners. I think everyone who works in water in the cities has been saying, lay down pipelines now for treated wastewater to come to your apartments. Because transporting water by truck or tanker should not be the case. I mean, it's very inefficient energy-wise. And it's only because of the lack of options that it's being done. But we could have pipelines laid down for... But there's no separate pipeline for treated wastewater, which can easily be laid down and comes back to homes, apartments, office buildings, industries. So that's one solution that definitely should be adopted. I think the other thing is really, you know, designating areas of the city because, and this will be only post the monsoon, but starting to already look at which areas of the city should we allow to flood and actually hold water when it rains so that we don't have this problem again and then we allow aquifer recharge to happen. If people aren't already doing rainwater harvesting, I mean, it's in their best interest. The largest problems, I would say, are on the periphery of the city where you tend to have these really large townships and apartment complexes. And most of them do have sewage treatment plants. So if you've ever debated you're retrofitting your sewage treatment plant and improving it, this is the time to do it. If you do that, you will have additional water available tomorrow. It's not like you have to wait for 2 months, wait for all of these agencies to work together. You can do it right away.
And, is there any interest that the government is picking, talking to multiple stakeholders? What's happening there in the administration?
I think it's the scale of the problem is so massive now that I don't think they can, sit back and not address it. So I do think that it does feel like it's a bit late in the game to start doing these things, considering that we are here. But I also feel like the government is trying to rectify the situation as fast as it possibly can. It is also a very large problem to solve. Right now, even having clear data as to which are the boreholes that are drying up in the city can give the government a better idea of which parts of the city are actually facing the most acute water stress. Because now it's on anecdotal. They're getting messages from this area and that district, but they're not able to accurately predict how much has the water actually gone down. I feel that from a systemic lens, something that needs to be worked on is the building codes themselves. Because a lot of the built-up part of the city is actually privately owned. And right now, the building bylaws only state that open spaces need to be open. They don't say anything about how permeable they need to be and how much rainwater, et cetera, needs to be recharged through those spaces. And those guidelines should actually be incorporated into the rainwater hubs. Because I think the core takeaway for anyone listening to this, in my opinion, should be that actually, it's not such a complicated problem. We just need to focus on better managing local sources of water. Because the minute you start importing water from far away, and we know that that's a very sort of troubled thing already between the Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, the amount of water allocation. So it's going to be much harder to fight for more and more water. And if we want Bangalore to continue growing, then we really need to look at how we, as citizens, work with the government to better manage the resources. If you go to a village and you look at the well, it's probably the cleanest part of the village because everyone values it so much. Our lakes are places where everything is dumped and, it's looked at or it's encroached upon and no one really complains about it. So I think more ownership of our own local water sources is the best way to propel change even with the government. If everyone starts asking for the same things, it has to happen. We will see this change happening.
Still makes me think that this is not the first time we are seeing this, right? Probably it has become, it looks more ugly this time, but precisely every season this problem arises one way or the other in some intensity or the other. But why was nothing done before? A very crude way to put it, but I get what I'm asking.
My theory is that if you could pay money, you could still get a tanker before. And that's no longer the case. And I think that's the main reason that it's also, and also it's coupled with the fact that it's an election year and there are lots of other political reasons for it. But let's ride the political wave rather than, not and try and affect the change that we need. And I think citizens advocating for the right set of solutions is probably the best way to get the government to actually do the things that are needed. So you're reusing more wastewater, cleaning up our lakes, harvesting rainwater. Three things, three takeaways. If there's only one thing that you hear in this whole episode, it's that. So, yeah.
Yeah, correct. Thank you so much for joining us, Shreya. It was a pleasure talking to you.
It was a pleasure talking to you too, Sneha. Thanks a lot. Bye.